The following program is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. Although, Zorba, we're missing the innocuous artwork that's hanging on the walls that you usually
see.
And
the old magazines.
The old magazines, the butcher
National
paper.
National Geographic, the whole thing.
Plastic that's trees. Right. Anyways, we're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your emails and a few of your phone calls as well. So if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Right. So melatonin gummies are something that a lot of people use to go to sleep. Now, these are different than THC gummies, which people use to go to sleep, or cannabis gummies that people use to go to sleep or stay awake. But melatonin gummies may have a different dose than what you think is on the label. We'll talk about that, where the FDA fits in and where the FDA does not fit in with this. And then sedentary time with adolescents' hearts. You know, our kids are in front of screens all the time. They're not getting out. They're not moving. What does this say about their hearts now? And what does it say about heart disease in the future? Some interesting data that comes out of Europe.
Interesting stuff. And what is the special recipe today?
Scampi. I happen to love a whole variety of scampi. This is mushroom scampi. It's a wonderful recipe. Wonderful for anybody who loves mushrooms and anyone who loves garlic.
Wow, that sounds great. I'll eat that. All right, to the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now. This is a listener in Glenwood, Iowa. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I've learned so much over the years. I haven't been 40, but thanks again, Dr. Perloff, for all that you're doing.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I have a question because last year I joined the ranks of the younger members of our family who all have to eat gluten-free, and I found out that's a good thing for me.
Uh-huh.
But I've always heard that I should eat what's called a fiber-rich diet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
How can I do that if I'm gluten-free?
Well, first of all, you said you find it's good for you. You mean you feel better when you're eating gluten-free food?
Oh, yes. I suffered for decades from, let's call it, uncomfortable times in the bathroom.
Uh-huh. So you may have had something called the gluten enteropathy, which basically, so a lot of people are gluten-free because they feel better, but they don't actually have trouble absorbing wheat. But other people really have trouble absorbing wheat. And it's kind of a difficult thing to diagnose in the office. It's not difficult in one way. We now actually have a blood test, which will pick up some, not all, but some of the people with a gluten enteropathy. That's where, once again, your wheat does not digest well in your small intestine. And wheat turns out to be in everything. But fiber, well, you can get fiber in a lot of things. So first of all, psyllium. You know Metamucil, the name brand thing?
Mm-hmm.
Metamucil is psyllium husk. So it is the husk of a psyllium seed that mostly comes from India. And we produce it, but we get a lot from India. And frankly, that is a very good way to get fiber. It's easy. You put some in like water in the morning or put some in some orange juice and drink it down. And you can get plenty of fiber that way. And then you can do other things. You can have, you know, other sorts of things that have high fiber that are just not made of wheat. I've got a question for you. How's your poop?
I didn't know that I could have it be normal.
Right. So you had loose stools your whole life? Is that what you had?
Oh, yes. And what was diagnosed as irritable bowel. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but there's nothing we can do about it. And there didn't seem to be.
No. You know, it's very interesting. Irritable bowel is sort of a wastebasket disease where people have they'll have an enlarged tummy or they have little diarrhea. And we often don't think of gluten as being the issue. So how long have you been on a gluten-free diet?
It's only a matter of, say, 10 months, but mm-hmm. I saw a difference within a week.
Right. I'm sure you have that. You know, keep it up. By the way, I was in the store the other day, and I was looking for some spaghetti, and I pulled out some gluten-free spaghetti, which I have not made yet. Have you tried that at all?
Yes. The penne cooks well if you don't overcook it, and the spaghetti, and they do have flavor. The bread isn't so good.
But no, the bread is not. But I'll tell you something. I ate a brioche gluten-free bread that turned out to be very good. So you've got to shop around and find things, because believe me, the manufacturers of food products are definitely jumping on the bandwagon, if they had, and they have for a long time. So experiment, find some things. And Carl, you know, we've got, we don't tend to do gluten-free recipes.
I'll make a note of that right now.
I remember the last time. We should do a few gluten-free recipes.
We will, for sure. I just actually the other day at the store picked up a two-pack of gluten-free pizzas with cauliflower crust.
Oh, I've had that.
They're pretty good.
I've had that. They're pretty good. So that's it. Well, congratulations. You found something good. And the reality is, use some Metamucil and you'll go far. And your poop will never be the same.
In a good way.
Thank you.
You take care now.
Thank you.
You know, there actually is the Bristol Stool Scale, which we will put on our website. And you would think about, that's how the Brits are. The Brits are very involved with their poop. And the Bristol Stool Scale, which is very hard to try to say that three or four times. Bristol Stool Scale, not the Bristol School Scale, actually is a way to see what your poop is like, because that actually is what gastroenterologists use and others use to actually determine whether or not you have something sausage-like, pellet-like, or diarrhea-like.
And there's different colors too, right?
Not on the scale?
You know,
well, it's a color. You know,
isn't color have a lot to do with it too?
Yeah, I'll have to look at the scale. I think it's more like that. You know, I don't mean to have a potty mouth on this, but actually is important. How we poop is a major part of our lives.
You never will pass up an opportunity to talk about poop on the air. I know that, Zorba. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave us a voice message, 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, our first topic of the day, some new research from JAMA about melatonin gummies. They have a higher dose. What's maybe on the label?
Well, the question is, what's on the label with any supplement? So first of all, let's just talk about supplements. Supplements are not regulated by the FDA. So in other words, you may buy any supplement and it may say 10 milligrams, 20 milligrams, 30 milligrams. I don't care what the supplement is. And there's no FDA that says you really have to have 20 milligrams in there. It's not like a vitamin. And so if you're looking at supplements, you have to go to a reliable source. And I just want to mention that at first. So I happen to like a website called consumerlab.com. I think they're good. You got to pay money to get onto the site. But what they do is they look at things like melatonin gummies. They actually test them. Mm-hmm. They then put them on which ones they tested. And they actually tell you how much it is per milligram. So you can be cost aware, because there are big differences for the same amount of melatonin. The other issue with that is the fact that store-labeled gummies or anything that's store-labeled, they often stand behind it. So Walgreens, CVS, Walmart, Target, Costco, all of them don't want to have somebody do an independent review and say, hey, there are not enough milligrams in this particular supplement. So I just want to mention that to people, because people are not aware. So do you buy any supplements?
I actually use some melatonin gummies from time to time.
How do you decide which one to buy?
I go really low dose, like the kids ones, basically.
No, how do you decide on which company to buy from?
Oh, because I've been working on the show for quite a while, and I've heard you talk about how you got to go to a store you trust because they stand behind their product.
You may just look at the label and say, oh, Nature's Way label, this looks like a good one. You can't tell from the label.
Well, didn't they find that some of the dosage was higher than was posted?
And that is exactly the point. So they did 22. They looked at a whole bunch of gummy supplements, 25 gummy supplements. Guess how many were mislabeled?
How many?
22 out of 25.
Wow.
So in other words, they looked at most of the products contain 20, 30, or 50% more melatonin than they said was in the product. In some cases, it was like 2.5 times more. 4 of the products had less than they actually had them. They were inaccurately labeled. And when you look at this, this is really important, because when you look at it for either melatonin, CBD, or cannabis gummies, all of them often used from people to go to sleep, you don't know squat about whether or not they're going to have it in there. And I think this is really an important thing that consumers, they don't know about. I mean, they look and they go, oh, it's Nature's Way gummy, and they read about it, and they say, we've been in the business forever. My grandfather was in the business, and it came from 1858 in Italy, and they give you a whole story, which is really rock and roll advertising that has nothing to do. It's all marketing. soil marketing. So either it's going to be consumerlab.com, Consumer Reports often, that you also have to buy, have to look at it, or another verified site. And that's how you determine which melatonin gummy you're going to use to go to sleep. I think melatonin is safe and effective, but you want to make sure you're getting the same amount each time so you know how much you're getting. Because you may say, hey, this thing really put me to sleep. And then next month, you may buy another melatonin. You may say, you know, it's not working anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? It's not working because the dose is not the same. So buyer beware, either choose a store brand because I think they're going to stand behind it, or go to consumerlab.com, spend your $25 for the year. I think that's what it costs, but I haven't looked at them recently. And then get a brand that actually they have tested and you know is going to be safe, effective, and what you get is what's on the label.
Good advice, Zorba. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413. You can leave us a voicemail, and let's go to a voicemail now. This is one from Wisconsin.
Hello, Dr. Zorba. I am currently taking a walk with my dog trying to get the dementia risk down according to your recommendation. So thank you. My question is, on social media, I've been seeing a lot of ads for weight loss based on your hormonal type and how you have to find out your hormone type to know what you need to do to lose weight, et cetera, especially as I'm in my mid-40s and at some point I'll be facing menopause. I'm just wondering, what is the validity of the hormones affecting weight loss? And is that something that these social media ads are just trying to sell, like like fake placebos, or is it really something I should be concerned of? Thank you so much.
You know, that is such a good question, especially since we just talked about melatonin. And here it is, social media, advertising. You know, what do we get from advertising? We get some good stuff and we get some bad stuff. So here it is, they're advertising, take this or take that, because you really got to lose weight according to the hormones and what's going on. And the answer is, no, that's garbage. It has nothing to do with it. Now, losing weight is not easy. Gaining weight, it's easy. Losing weight, not easy. So, you know, there's so many issues with weight loss, and there's so much junk that's on the market. Now, we know, of course, that Ozempic, which is now the GLP-1 drug that's used for $1,000 a month if you're paying for it,
Wow. Actually
causes people to lose weight up to 50 pounds. But recent information has shown that there may be increased in suicidal ideation for people taking Ozempic. And we won't get into that as a story. That's a whole other topic that we're going to talk about on a future show. But the answer is, weight loss, hormones, are they linked together? Well, of course they are linked together in your body. As women get older, they have more fat in their body. Muscle is replaced by fat. As men get older, guess what? Muscle is replaced by fat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I look in the mirror, I'm an old guy. I'm 75, 76. I'm going to be 76 soon. And I weigh about the same as I did 40 years ago. When I look in the mirror, I go, where do those love handles come from? I'm the same weight as I was before. And you know what? They just came from, that's my curriculum vitae. It's because I'm a wise elderly, so I have these love handles. You can't get over that. So hormones do make a difference. When women go through menopause, they do gain more fat in their body, but there is no diet that is specifically involved with that has been scientifically proved to do anything. Ultimately, it's the calories that come in, it's the exercise that goes out, and Mother Nature plays a role.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, before we take a break, let's do that segment where we give some of your naysayers some airtime. There's only a couple of them, but we give them airtime.
Okay.
There's not too many naysayers. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
All right, Zorba, the following email came from a listener named Tom in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And Zorba, the previous discussion Tom's referring to, it was talking about when hugging became more widely accepted
when
for men.
Hugging, right.
That's what,
because it changed over my lifetime.
That's right. That's what you're talking about on the show.
Right.
Tom from Stevens Point writes, a correction for Dr. Zorba. Our culture's acceptance of hugging didn't begin with Bill Clinton. It began earlier in the 1970s and 80s with Leo Buscaglia, a.k.a. Dr. Love, who constantly promoted hugging.
Oh, I remember.
Do you remember him?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely remember him. He wrote a number of books.
He did. He was on PBS a lot.
On TV all the time, right. Leo Buscaglia.
Leo Buscaglia.
Yeah, major guy.
Yep. So I did a little bit of research on Leo, and I'd never heard of him before. I'm sure some of our listeners had heard of him, but I came across an interview he did in 1982 on David Letterman's TV show. So this is early David Letterman. Keep in mind, this is about 40 years ago, and I think David Letterman has probably grown up a bit since his comments about
maybe he's grown up.
But the message here
certainly looks grown up with his beard and everything else. There's
true.
No doubt about
he's got
it.
A big beard.
He's
now.
Not a young looking guy. Big guy. Looks. He's got a different look.
Yeah, but it gives a little context about Leo Buscaglia, and I think it's a good message here. So I want to play this clip. Brad, let's cue up that clip on Letterman.
And we know scientifically that when somebody touches you, embraces you, your hemoglobin count goes up. And the hemoglobin is that magical stuff that carries the oxygen to the heart and the brain and the vital organs. And so you're a healthier person. You should basically hug at least 4 times a day.
But
you bet.
That notion strikes me as being uncomfortable. I don't want to hug most people.
Don't you?
No. Now, does that mean there's something desperately wrong with me?
No, absolutely not. It just means you don't want to hug somebody.
Yeah, okay. Well, I get my hemoglobin up in other ways, I think, probably. But not hugging.
Would you like to tell us about that?
Well, I think if you hug the one or two people you want to hug, period, that ought to do the same thing, don't you think?
It does a lot. But, you know, there are an awful lot of people out there that need a little hugging.
Yeah.
And you don't lose anything by doing it, and you both gain.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you reticent?
I see a lot of fat people.
Well, as an Italian, that appeals to me.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't mean that. I know it's fine to be fat if you want to be fat. That's fine. I have nothing against fat people. I just don't, it's poor packaging.
And David, you're hugging not a package. You're hugging a warm, tender, loving human being, and it hardly matters what the package is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think too often.
So, 1982, David Letterman. I thought there was a good message buried in there. So what do you think of all that?
Well, first of all, I remember Leo Buscaglia.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good message. But you listen to the clip, and it's very interesting how culture changes.
Oh, yeah.
Because, first of all, fat people, it's insulting, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't hug fat people. That's a really insulting thing. I don't know if he would say that today.
He definitely wouldn't. I bet would cringe hearing that clip.
But also, I don't think the audience would laugh at that today either.
Absolutely
so
not.
It shows you how we have to be more respectful of people with different body types.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, it's very interesting how Leo Buscaglia may have moved that forward. Because
mm-hmm.
when I was a kid, I remember when, and I've mentioned this before, Fidel Castro and Khrushchev hugged each other, and my father said, that's disgusting, because he saw two men hugging, and he thought
couldn't
it was disgusting.
It. Yep.
Well, he thought it was disgusting. I mean, it was in his brain, but my father was born in 1909, so it was something that men did not do. They didn't hug each other. And now you look at NFL games, and the guys are always hugging each other, and it's considered to be a warm, wonderful
thing. Patting each other's butts.
But Leo may have been that, and you do have people that all of a sudden make a society change.
Mm-hmm.
And hugging is good. And body type, we have to be respectful of everyone with every single body type. Because the reality is, that's who we are. That's who we are.
Do you disagree with the good doc? If you do, he'll just reach over the airwaves and give you a big old hug, maybe. Can you do that over the air? Try. If anyone could do it, you could do it, Zorba. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
zorba@wpr.org.
More of your calls to come, more of your emails, and we'll sink our teeth into a tasty mushroom scampi recipe.
Delicious.
All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in the studio here with Dr. Zorba on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. But before we get back to those phone calls, Zorba, let's do the recipe. Mushroom scampi.
Now, do you like scampi, shrimp scampi?
I've had shrimp scampi. I used to work at the Olive Garden, actually. So there was shrimp scampi all around me
all
the time.
So how is there shrimp scampi? I haven't gone there, in years.
It's been a long... That was back in college. I was
a
bartender there. I think whatever free meal they gave me on my shift, I would eat. But I do remember there was a server there who would say, shrimp scampi. You know? So whenever I see scampi, I hear her voice.
So did you get the free meals that nobody else ate because they had too much of the stuff?
I got the floor pasta they dropped.
You got floor pasta?
No, floor not really. Mushroom scampi.
Floor pasta. We won't even.
That's our next recipe next week.
Go there. So mushroom scampi, so it uses garlic. Scampi is garlic. I have made a variety of shrimp scampis at home. I have never made a shrimp scampi that I've been happy with.
Okay.
In my mind, I mean, I've had shrimp scampi in Italy, and it was really good. It was robust. The garlic was just right. And when it comes to shrimp, you've got to be so careful with things. When it comes to mushrooms, you've got a little more leeway in how you do it with shrimp. Do you make shrimp at home?
Yeah. We definitely make
shrimp. So you know if you cook it too much.
It's easy to mess up. Yeah,
it's
for sure.
It just needs a touch of heat. It doesn't. Yep. But mushrooms are completely different.
I love cooking mushrooms.
It's completely different.
My kids love mushrooms too. And by the way, I forgot to tell you, this recipe, my mother-in-law cooked it for me, actually.
Oh.
She found it online and cooked it for us.
Wow.
It was fantastic.
Wow.
It was very good.
You like your mother-in-law?
Sure, yeah. She's great.
Just checking.
There's no other answer to that question, is there?
There's no other answer to that question. Right, Brad? There's no other answer to that question.
He just put his hands up.
That's right. All right. Start out with 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
1 shallot thinly sliced.
1 shallot thinly sliced.
1.5 pounds of button mushrooms. Cremini? Wait a second.
Cremini or cremini? I don't know.
Cremini. Anyway.
Someone will let us know.
But I'll tell you something. I have 1.5 pounds of mushrooms. You can use any kind of mushroom you want to, but 1.5 pounds of mushrooms. 1/2 quartered. You want them cut into smaller pieces.
1.5 pounds of mushrooms of choice, halved or quartered.
That's right. 4 garlic cloves finely chopped.
4 garlic cloves finely chopped.
1/2 cup of dry white wine and 1/2 cup of vegetable stock.
Yes.
Yes to both. Okay.
Yes to both. I agree.
1 teaspoon of kosher salt.
1 little tea kosher salt.
That's right. Yeah, kosher salt, there's a different texture to it, so that's what I would use. 1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes.
1/4 little tea red pepper flakes.
So you have a big container or a small container of red pepper flakes. You know, those are the ones you put on pizza.
Right. My friend's dad used to call them red devils. I love putting them on pizza. We have kind of a big jar of herbs.
Yeah, because I use
container.
It all the time.
Yeah.
You're going to use some black pepper, by the way. Black pepper, coarsely ground, of course.
Mm-hmm.
1/2 cup of parsley leaves, tightly packed, roughly cut. So you want to use a lot of parsley leaves in this.
1/2 cup of roughly chopped parsley leaves.
You know, parsley I always think of as an herb that is underused. It really has a very nice sort of smell to it and flavor to it, so it's really good.
Do you ever see parsley and not think of the Simon and Garfunkel album?
No.
I see the album cover.
It's right in there. It's right in there right now. It's right in there. The vinyl.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be vinyl.
3 to 4 tablespoons of lemon juice. It's got to be fresh. 1 to 2 lemons. Don't want to use reconstituted.
3 to 4 big tea lemon juice. And here's a quick thing on that. My mother-in-law, she made this for me twice. The second time she made it, she used lemon zest instead of lemon juice, and I think it was a little bit better.
Oh, you mean so she used three to four tablespoons?
Not that much lemon zest. I can't remember. It was a lot less than that.
So you used a combination.
Yeah.
Well, the zest has more flavors.
It
so
does.
You could use 3 to 4 tablespoons. You could use like 3 tablespoons of lemon juice and then 1 teaspoon or 1 tablespoon of lemon zest.
Yeah, that sounds
about
right.
But actually, that is a good idea because lemon zest actually itself is bitter, but in a small amount, it's going to add a lot of flavor.
It really brightened everything up. It was great.
And then you choose the pasta noodles.
Yep, pasta noodles of choice. Let's make it.
Heat a large 12-inch skillet over medium heat. Melt the butter and oil. Remember, you've got to be careful with butter because you don't want to burn it. And then add the shallots, stirring in until softened, about 1 minute. Add the mushrooms. Cook until the mushrooms are soft but still plump. In other words, you don't want them too dried. That is 3 to 5 minutes. Then add the garlic. Toss for only 15 to 20 seconds. Then add the wine, vegetable stock, salt, red pepper flakes, a few pinches of freshly ground black pepper, and then half the parsley. Increase the heat to medium-high. Cook, stirring occasionally until the wine has been reduced by half. Thicken slightly. That's about 3 to 5 minutes. And once you make it, you'll get the idea of how much it is, you know, how much you're actually going to have to cook it. Remove it from the heat, then stir in the lemon juice. Very important. You don't want to really get that lemon juice too hot because you're going to destroy the flavor of the lemon juice. Taste it. Add a little more salt if you want to. And then add the remaining parsley, so you've got some cooked parsley, you've got some fresh parsley, and then put it on the pasta of your choice. You may want to put, you know, spaghetti, you may want to use fettuccine, you may want to use one of those little round things, you may want to use the bows. You choose. This is mushroom scampi.
You forgot one step at the end, and that is...
To say thank you?
You say thank you to my mother-in-law. This was great.
Oh, that is say thank
you. This was a great recipe.
I wasn't even thinking. Thank you, mother-in-law. What's her name?
Debbie.
Oh, you got it right away. You see, it was right in the tip of your tongue. Thank you, Debbie.
Yeah, I remembered her name.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can also find us on Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's go to the phones now. This is a caller joining us from Minnieska, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi, Doc. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 70-plus-year-old farmer from Minnesota, and I struggle with weight loss, and I'm wondering about natural hormone balance, these pellets you can get to implant to help with low T. Is that something that would work, and does it have side effects?
Everything has side effects. You're a farmer, right? When you do stuff on your farm and you feed your animals something different, do they ever have side effects?
Oh, you bet they do.
That's a nice way of putting it, right?
Well, that's side exactly effects. Right. You know, side effects. And you're 70 plus. I've got a question, first of all. Are you ever going to give up farming?
No.
That's right. That's exactly. My dad was not a farmer. He was an entrepreneur, worked in things. He worked until he was 87. And, you know, when he was 86, I said, are you ever going to give up what you're doing? He said, why should I? I like doing it. You know,
that's Was he selling gumball machines?
Well,
having a 55th class reunion this year, and that was one of the questions. You know, what are you doing in retirement? There is no retirement for me. I want to do what I can as long as I can.
Right. No, I
love it.
I love farming. I completely relate to that. When you're doing something productive, why not continue doing something productive? But getting back to your question about low T, we have to look at testosterone. So first of all, there's been a lot of research on testosterone and whether or not it's good for men, whether or not there actually is something called male menopause. And the feds did a bunch of research to see what the side effects may be. Well, first of all, there are potential side effects of heart disease, heart attacks that may be increased when you have more testosterone in your body than Mother Nature allowed you on that particular time. Now, if we look at women and estrogen, at one point, I, as a doctor, was putting every woman on estrogen because we said it was good for memory and it was good for your heart. And then we discovered it was bad for your breast because it caused an increase in breast cancer. So when we look at testosterone, we have to think about the side effects and what it actually does. So if you have a measurement of low testosterone as a 70-year-old man, I would guess that probably more than half of all men are going to show a low testosterone. That's going to be the case. And whether or not either the pellets, the testosterone shots that go in every 2 weeks, or whether or not you actually rub the testosterone on your skin, because that's another way to get it, is going to have you lose weight? Probably not. Is it going to increase sex drive? Might, because that's what the studies have shown. It might show a difference in sex drive. Is it going to help with erectile function as a male gets older? Turns out that Viagra and Cialis are much better at erectile function function than testosterone. And that's where you and your healthcare provider have to sort of sit and look and say, what's in my best interest? But does it have side effects? Yes. So you could talk to your doc. You could take testosterone, which, by the way, can also go through not just the testosterone that may or may not be covered by your Medicare. It may be covered. It may not be covered. It can be expensive. But there are also compounding pharmacies that will put testosterone up at a fraction of the cost. And I would try the testosterone cream that you put under your armpit. Put them under your armpit because that's where they absorb well. And give yourself a six-week trial. And if you're not sure, you go on it for 6 weeks. Go off it for 6 weeks, go on it for 6 weeks, go off it for 6 weeks, because there's a placebo effect. I wouldn't use the pellets. I'd go to the cream.
Okay. I appreciate it, Doc. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks. And keep up the good work. Keep farming. Never retire.
Next time you enjoy a good steak, think of me.
I will, and I do enjoy a good steak. I do. I do. Okay.
All right. Take care.
Bye for now.
Take care. All right, 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite hand raisers and backseat drivers.
Ba-da-da-da!
The Grammar Police. You know, Zorba, can we re-record that jingle with you doing the vocal just like you did? I think it would go over well. All right, we'll talk about that later. The following quibble comes to us from Steve, who listens to the show on WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee. Steve writes, on a recent show, you were discussing the joys of chocolate. You said that one type of chocolate, quote, has less fat and less calories. You should have said it, quote, has less fat and fewer calories. And then Steve says, the MLS Style Center says, and by the way, I'm going to stop Steve there.
Okay.
It's actually not the MLS. It's the MLA.
Oh.
So this is one of my favorite
Modern
things.
Language
when
Association
a grammar police person
makes a mistake,
messes up in their email.
That's right. You know what we say?
It's
we
chef's
say,
kiss.
Come on.
It's amazing.
Come on. That's right.
So
that's right.
The MLS is actually the Major League Soccer. So he means the MLA, which stands for Modern Language Association.
I know the MLA. Yeah,
typos happen. Not a big deal. Yeah, obviously, yeah. It's just
maybe
a typo.
Maybe it's not a typo.
But who's keeping
maybe
track?
Maybe he doesn't know. Yeah. I am.
Steve's keeping track.
They all keep track. They've got a little list. They've got an Excel document. Error,
that's
mistake.
Right. Yeah, I'm giving Steve a hard time. Back to his email here. He writes, the MLA Style Center says that we should, quote, use fewer with countable items, otherwise use the word less. And here's a tip. In general, if the noun is plural, use fewer. Mm-hmm. If it's singular, use less. Uh-huh. Steve goes on.
This sounds like fourth grade, like may and can. Go ahead.
The MLA Style Center does note there are exceptions for some plural nouns, especially ones referring to money,
that's right.
distance,
money,
or time.
Money, distance, and time.
Where less
money, distance,
should
and time.
Be used. The word less for
less.
Those
fewer
those
money,
categories.
Fewer distance, fewer time. Doesn't make sense.
And of course, Steve
less
gives us
money,
some examples of this.
That's right. That's
he's going to give us examples. So these are Steve's examples.
Okay, let's listen. Go
she
ahead.
Earns less than $50 an hour.
She earned fewer than $50 an hour. You wouldn't
less.
Say it.
No,
less.
Yeah. We have driven less than 50 miles today.
We've done fewer than 50 miles. Yeah, that wouldn't make sense. That's
and right. the video is less than 30 minutes.
Yes, but I think the video should be less than 5 minutes.
30
minutes is too long a video.
10 minutes.
Actually, when you look at videos on things like Amazon, if they're talking about a product, if it's 5 minutes, you'd never do it. It has to be a minute and a half.
Oh, yeah, you lose them right away.
So, Steve, so we've lost it already. We've talked too long about this.
Yep.
So we now have fewer people listening or less people listening. That's
Steve,
what I want to know.
Believe it or not, Steve continues.
That's right.
If it's any consolation.
Steve is a grammarian or he's got OCD. No, I shouldn't say that. That would be insulting. He's a grammarian. Go ahead.
Steve is a grammarian.
I've got less time for Steve.
If
fewer minutes.
If it is any consolation.
No consolation.
You are not
Steve.
Alone in making this error.
I've got a consolation, guys. I've made lots of errors in my life. I'm willing to admit it. Mea culpa. Mea culpa. Go
Steve
ahead.
Steve says, I hear it frequently from newscasters and well-educated people being interviewed on
people.
Radio
so Steve,
and TV.
So Steve is now actually casting aspersions. aspersions on well-educated people. So if I'm doing fewer versus less, am I well-educated? Ah, come on, I've got an MD, and I almost got a master's. I really shouldn't have gotten that MD because I'm less educated. Go ahead.
I thought you'd react like this. No, this is great.
He is not trying to insult us.
I bet Steve's trying to educate us. Yeah.
Trying to educate us. Go ahead. If you're listening, Steve. Go on. Is there more?
That's it. Yeah, that's the end of Steve's email. There's more of Less. Yeah.
By the way, if you want a great read, there's a book called Less. It won the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago. It's a great read. Steve, read Less, and you'll understand a lot about writing. It's a wonderful book. When was the last time you read? Let me guess. The last book you read was before you had children,
you
right?
You nailed it. Yeah. Well, wait. I did read a little book that I could get in.
Give me like 30 words.
It was about the history and the making of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the movie.
For some reason, that was the book I read. That was a good movie.
Oh,
yeah.
It's one of my
favorites. How many years ago?
I read that last year.
Oh, not bad. One book a year.
It's a lot of it's about John Sandy.
When you've got two small children, one book a year is about all you make it. Yeah. You're less of a reader now than you ever were.
I'm fewer of a reader than I was.
I want Steve or somebody to write us about the use of the word more, when we use more.
We got to wrap this segment up here. Do you wish Steve's email had fewer typos or maybe less length? I'm kidding, Steve. We love our listeners. Join the ever-growing grammar police force. Send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, another interesting topic to discuss, and more listener emails. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
On Your Health.
From PRX, the Public Radio,
Radio Exchange.
Carl Christensen here with Dr. Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. You can leave us a voicemail. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to our callers, we got a topic here. Sedentary time may significantly affect hearts of adolescents?
Well, that's a real issue. You know, obesity is an issue with kids. Mm-hmm. Too much screen time is an issue. We shouldn't really think of it as too much screen time. We should think of it as too little active time.
Right.
I mean, because that's really what it's a moniker for. But I remember I would come home from school and I would eat two Hostess cream-filled cupcakes. My mother would leave for me with milk and watch the Three Stooges. But after the Three Stooges was on TV, it was like boring stuff like the news, and I would go outside and play.
Sure.
But now, you know, if kids come home from school, they may not watch the Three Stooges, or they might,
right. But
they don't go outside and play. And this is not a small issue. This is a great big giant issue. And it started with when I was a kid, there was President Kennedy's, he had physical fitness because the Russians had put up the Sputnik, and it was felt in the 50s and the 60s that American kids were not fit enough. And it was a big issue. Well, the big issue over the last 50 years has become a bigger and bigger and bigger issue. And this particular study looked at it, came out of England, came out of the UK, the Bristol Study of Children. These are kids, 530 adolescents, 17 years of age and older. And they did a whole bunch of things. They looked at the fat mass of their body, the muscle mass on the body, their blood glucose, sugar, lipids, inflammatory markers, insulin, whether or not they smoked, whether or not they vaped, what their socioeconomic status, their history of cardiovascular in the family. And then they did echoes. Do you know what an echocardiogram is?
EKG.
No, it's not an EKG.
Oh, it's not?
It's sort of like, you can think of it as a sonar looking at your heart. It looks not the electrical activity of your heart, but how your heart's contracting.
Okay.
And we use echocardiograms to look at people who have valve disease, whether or not they're in heart failure, but we're measuring actually how the heart is moving. Very, very important. And they looked at it, and lo and behold, they found the kids who sat around and did less had larger hearts, but didn't have a larger heart in terms of their muscle mass.
Ah.
So in other words, they might have a larger, fattier, flabbier heart, and that may not bode well for them in the future. In other words, what you want is you want a strong heart. You want a heart that is strong and compact. You don't want a heart that is flabby and larger. And this was a very unfortunate, almost scary result that kids, when they're younger, if they're not going out and do things, may actually impact their lifestyle or impact their life when they're 50 or 60 years of age. So I think the bottom line here is the bottom line that we always have as parents and as grandparents. Get your kids out to move, because movement is healthy and too much screen time is bad.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's go back to those phones now. This is a listener in British Columbia, Canada. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have a problem for Dr. Zorba, and it deals with phlegm in my throat. And it's a morning, like from 8 o'clock till noon, and it gives me problem, and it's going back to 5 years plus.
Uh-huh.
And the doctors that I... Well, we don't have too many doctors here in British Columbia, but the doctor I used to have before he retired, he simply said he didn't know. And I'm hoping that Dr. Zorba would give...
So where in B.C. do you live?
We live in the Okanagan Valley. It's a desert valley, and it's probably, well, it is the only desert valley, and I think it's probably the most beautiful spot to live in North America.
Yeah, no, I've been to BC numerous times, and back when I was in medical school, I hitchhiked all the way across the Trans-Canada Highway, and I remember how beautiful BC was. It was just great, you know, all the way through the province. Hard to pick up a ride, but beautiful, because there weren't many people going down the Trans-Canada in those days. That was the case. I do have some ideas. A couple of questions. Do you have any stomach pain, stomach discomfort, something we call GERD?
GERD, I have no idea what
so,
that means.
So GERD is gastroesophageal reflux disease. Let me explain, because that may be what you have. It may be what you have. So when we get older, at the base of our esophagus, we have a little sphincter there. It keeps the food in the stomach while the stomach is churning and digesting, and it keeps it from going up the esophagus. And if it goes up the esophagus, it can be very painful, and that's called GERD, when all of a sudden people have a lot of heartburn. But some people can have little sloshing of acid up the esophagus, and it doesn't burn, but it produces enough irritation to cause a cough. And that turns out to be a very common thing as you get older. It's very, very common.
This is not a cough, doctor. This is phlegm. that I have to cough up. And some of the is about the size of one's thumbnail.
Okay.
And
okay.
To cough it up, I've found that if I kneel over in a shower and let gravity assist me, I can cough it up. And it is in yellow in color.
Uh-huh. Were you a smoker years ago, or are you a smoker now? Did you smoke cigarettes?
No, I haven't smoked there for 50, 60 years.
Okay, a long time. Do you use any inhalers at all?
No, I my health is probably close to 100%. I don't take any medicine or anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
My age, of course, is 84 right now. But the medicine that I take is prednisone for gouty arthropathy, and I take some allopurinol, and I take some Prav, and which is a nasal spray, and that's about it.
Okay, so I've got two suggestions for you that you may want to do. One is a non-prescription medication, and one would be a prescription medication. So what I would do is go to the drugstore and get famotidine. F as in Frank, A-M-O. T-A-D-I-N-E, famotidine. It is something that's used for stomach distress, but some of your mucus, even though it doesn't seem like it's coming from your stomach, it might be the acid that's going on in your body is actually producing an irritation in your lung. So that's the easiest, cheapest way to initially see if that's going to do something. I would try that and give it a bit of time. See if that works. Okay. Now, if that doesn't work, I have another suggestion, and this will be a prescription drug. And you either use it as a nasal spray.
I do have a nasal spray. Iprevinent.
Atrovent. Oh, you're putting that in your nose. Okay.
Yeah.
The same, you may also want to use that as an inhaler in your lungs. In other words, it's used also as a lung inhaler to cut down on mucus. So it's the same drug, but you inhale it. And so that you need a prescription for from your doctor. So I would try that, not just in your nose. That's a good thing to use in the nose to cut it down, but you may be producing mucus in your lungs. Try those things.
Yeah. Thank you, doctor, for giving me these excellent suggestions.
And you are living in one of the most beautiful places in the world. And I've traveled all around the world, and BC is right at the top of my list as incredibly gorgeous, God's country.
And I've traveled throughout with my military career, but the Okanagan is the best.
He's seen a lot, and that's the best.
You take care now, and thanks for your call.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's pry open the always overstuffed Zorba Pastor On Your Health inbox. Let's take an email. This is from a listener named Terry who writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Yeah, good start, Terry. Mm-hmm. One topic that I've never heard come up is the fear of public speaking. Mm-hmm. I've tried the deep breathing, I've tried therapy, but I never had a breakthrough until my doctor prescribed 40 milligrams of propranolol.
Right, propranolol.
Propranolol, mm-hmm. I got that right. Mm-hmm. To be taken an hour or two before the public speaking event. Instead of having my heart rate race so much, I couldn't talk.
Right.
The heart rate stays constant and I'm able to speak comfortably. It really has been a life changer for me. The only downside is I need to skip running the next day because I assume I'm still under the effects of the medication and it's hard to get the heart rate up for a comfortable run. Anyways, keep up the good work." Now, Zorba, you do a lot of public speaking. Yeah, you have for years. Yeah. What do you think of this idea?
Well, first of all, beta blockers are great for public speaking. So he could go from 40 milligrams down to 10 milligrams. He may be on a dose that's higher. He may only need 10 milligrams. That's the usual dose that I prescribe for public speaking, 10. And I would try 10 milligrams, see if that works, or 20 milligrams. 40 is kind of, it's a good size dose, hefty dose. Mm-hmm. And it may stay around for 24 hours, in which case the next day you don't run quite as fast because, you know, your pulse doesn't go up, but I'll tell you, it really, really works for stage fright and public speaking. And by the way, many, many violinists who are in national orchestras, New York Philharmonic, Chicago Symphony Orchestra, take beta blockers because it stops the tremor in their fingers, in their hands when they have it. And I understand it. I like public speaking, and so what happens is before I get up and speak, I always have stage fright every single time.
Yeah.
Just before, when they're announcing that I'm going to go on and I'm going to talk, the first thing I think about as they're announcing is, why am I here? I don't want to be here. I don't like this. I really shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. And then when I get up and I start talking, it takes me about 30 seconds to a minute to get over it. And then I've figured out a way of doing that, you know, my own way. But it's very, very common. You talk to actors and actresses who are really good, and a lot of people have the same thing. It is the biggest fear that most people have is getting up in front of the public and talking. Mm-hmm. So do you have any trouble with public speaking?
I'm not great at public speaking. I took some courses in college, wasn't great, got nervous. I play music, so I'm on stage.
But music is different.
It's different,
right? Because you're with a group.
Right.
You're doing it with a group.
But I still get a little, that there's like that little jolt of endorphins right before.
Right before. And then how long does it take before that jolt, before you're in the scene?
Just like a minute or two, and then you settle in. But it actually kind of helps, I've found. You kind of, it kind of gets you going.
Gets you going. But if the gets you going gets a fast heart, and if the fast heart then makes you anxious, then it's not good, and that's where it comes from. And beta blockers basically stop that from happening. Good email.
Good email, Terry. Do you have a question or comment for the show? Don't get nervous. Just pretend everyone is only wearing their underwear and send us an email. Isn't that one of those things they say? Pretend everyone's in their underwear?
That's ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before we head out today, Zorba, we love when our listeners chime in to lend their tips or expertise to the show.
Of course.
We always love that.
Always.
We get a lot of that,
when they're
too.
Good tips.
Yeah, they're good tips. They're usually good, too.
Yeah, good tips, yeah.
The following listener has a few tips, so we're just going to play his email for you.
Hi, Carl. This is Dennis in Two Rivers. I have a caller comment to enlighten Zorba and the other listeners. Zorba mentioned something about Brad giving away some steps since he walked like 20,000 steps a day. I don't know if that's supposed to be something like carbon offsets where Brad would sell or give away things like steps to people who want the sedentary offsets when they sit and not exercise. And as far as what Zorba said about Dr. Kellogg and cornflakes, that sounds like Zorba's attitude is spa bung spa bung bung spa humbug. There it is. Okay, so something just to pass along to Zorba and listeners.
He finally spit it out. Spa humbug, is the joke.
I love it. But you're right. Actually, I think we've got a new market exchange. I think people who do more than 10,000 steps a day like Brad can put the steps on the market, and that'll be a carbon offset
there
for people who do less.
Give away
and
your
then
steps.
They can, and then you raise money for charity. You know,
I like
or,
this idea.
You know, for shoes. But I think we've got something going there. What do you think about that, Brad?
Yeah, I don't know what NFTs are, but I'm going to have to find out, and I'll create NFTs.
That's it. We got it. Batches
of steps.
You'll
make a killing on that, Brad.
We got a website. We've got a thing. A killing. That's exactly it. Killing on a doctor show. I think that's it. Let's monetize this. That's what we got to figure out.
All right.
This is America. Monetize everything.
Do you have a health tip or maybe a questionably executed joke for the show? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org and, of course, through Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Carl.
If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Leave us a voicemail. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.